Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by Forever Family Foundation, on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I call your name, the echo is haunting, the echo is always the same. I call your name, the echo is haunting, an echo can never be changed. So I call your name.
And welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and I'm here with Tom and Melissa Gould, and we are your hosts for this evening. The gathering show is, if you don't know already, is our show that we do where we address your questions, and we want to hear from you about your own experiences. So whether you have a question about the afterlife or you want to share a personal experience with us, we would love to talk to you. The number here is 888-627-6008. And we have, you know, some of you have sent in some experiences and, you know, a bunch of questions, and we'll take some phone calls. But before we do that, let me read one that came in. This is not a question, a personal experience. Our son Gavin has sent us many signs that he is still with us. One of the biggest signs of proof that he is communicating with us was on Father's Day. Gavin is an artist, and at one point he had drawn a picture of a ninja with a dad bod, and I put it on the fridge. After we lost him, I moved most of his art upstairs to a ledge in the hallway to showcase this picture. On Father's Day, I was picking up the kitchen and then went to take a shower while my husband was watching our baby in the playroom. I came out and went into the kitchen, and there on the counter was Gavin's picture of the ninja with the dad bod right next to my husband's grilling utensils and rocks he had been collecting. He didn't even know it was there until I asked him if he had moved it. Once we sorted out that neither of us had done it, we realized the significance of it all. It was a picture of a ninja next to the grilling utensils that Gavin had clearly moved there to say Happy Father's Day. It was extremely profound and was further proof for us that Gavin is still with us.
Wow.
That's a nice.
I love that.
Yeah. That's a nice Father's Day present.
Now, Bob, when objects get moved, or is the, I'm thinking of that term we used to use sometimes on the radio show. We had this discussion when Fran was with us, and the word apport or aport, is that?
Yeah.
A known object or an unknown object?
An apport is something that occurred mostly in physical mediumship circles. And while people were sitting in a seance, something would literally just kind of fall from the sky or from the ceiling, which could be a gem or a coin or something material. And the theory is that people in spirit have the ability to do that. I mean, here this woman had, you know, the picture and placed the picture someplace. So I don't think it would fall under that category. Uh-huh. But Gavin somehow figured out a way using psychokinesis, using his mind to affect matter, to move it from one location to another.
That's awesome.
Pretty extraordinary, right?
Absolutely.
And on Father's Day.
On Father's Day, which is especially significant. Let's go to a couple of calls. We have Ree from North Carolina on line one. Hello, Ree.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be with you.
Happy to have you. Did you have something you wanted to share, or you had a question to discuss? Or?
Well, I am a big believer in signs. I ask for them all the time, and I receive them. I get hearts from my late husband all the time. And I tell my friends that all you have to do is ask for them, and you will get signs. And, you know, my first one was very quickly not 10 days after my husband died, I was at a restaurant with about 11 other people, and the waiter came, and I had been looking for my first heart sign since he died. And a waiter came to the table, and first he handed me a white tissue rose, which is a sign of eternal love. And I'm like, why did he pick me out of everybody?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when our dinner was done, he came and he handed me a heart that he had made out of the tissue paper, you know, out of the straw, you know, the cover for a straw.
Uh-huh.
He had bent it into the shape of a heart and put it in the straw and handed that to me.
Wow.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I'm in tears. My whole table knew I was waiting for my message. They're in tears. And it was just the start of everything. I get them all the time.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, let me ask you, I mean, you were with a lot of friends, and I assume you said it was 11 people? Or
there were 12 of us.
12 of you. So what was the reaction? I mean, to all 12 people, are they all receptive to these things, like in signs? Well, are they believers? Or
I would say some are believers, some were not. But after that night, they looked at me and they're dumbfounded. Like, how did that happen? As a matter of fact,
yeah.
My best friend, we left the restaurant and my best friend went back in and went to the waiter to say, why did you do it? And he said, I just felt moved.
Yeah.
And we all said, what if we didn't go to that restaurant? We were in Myrtle Beach. What if we didn't go to that restaurant? What if we didn't have that waiter? You know,
right.
Just all the stars aligned because they were supposed to. And that's what I tell people all the time.
Yeah, and somebody probably put the thought in your head to make sure that you went to that specific restaurant, you know,
yeah.
Behind the scenes,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And I have so many stories. It's just, it's awesome. And I love sharing them because when you can see people heal, you know, I lost a 3-month-old granddaughter and I told her I was going to make it really hard for her sign. And I live at the beach and, you know, we have sea glass and you'll find bits and pieces every once in a while. But this one day I said, you have a lot of help up there. So I'm going to ask for a piece of sea glass in the shape of a heart. And not 5 minutes later, I had it.
That's
you are so right about asking. People forget about that you need to ask.
And thanking. And thanking them.
Yeah.
Yes,
definitely. Gratitude is everything.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful.
That's fantastic.
Well, yeah. Well thank you so much for sharing all that. And I hope you get a lot
of
more hearts.
Of course. Thank you.
Thanks. Take care.
That was a fascinating call because I have heard more than one story about waiters giving signs in that way.
Did you have a specific one in mind? Because I'm thinking of my friend Barbara.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking.
She had lost her son. It was a kind of a lengthy story, but she shared this with a few of us that she had wanted a visit from her son, Christopher, who was a young man when he passed. And she'd tell everybody, you know, she started with, I made Santa Claus cry because she had run into him at a country store. And he said, oh, little girl, what do you want for Christmas? And she said, a dream of my son, Christopher. So that got Santa to cry. But not soon afterwards, she went to a luncheon with her sister, which they seemed to do annually, taking turns treating each other to lunch. And she happened to say it was a Cheesecake Factory restaurant, and the waiter was not particularly pleasant. And it was the sister's turn to treat for the meal, and Barbara was just hoping her sister was not going to leave this fellow a very big tip because he just hadn't been pleasant, and that made her uncomfortable. When dessert came around and it's Cheesecake Factory, her sister's ordering something elaborate and Barbara just said, you know, I'll have plain vanilla. And with that, the waiter's demeanor changed and he starts, oh, you must try one of our other desserts. We have all these flavors. And he just, is the word solicitous? He just became so involved in how Barbara was going to choose her dessert. And then at one point, at the end of the meal, he turns and he gives her a kiss on the cheek. And that night, Barbara had a dream from her son. And in her dream, the son said, "Mama, you didn't recognize me. I gave you a kiss." And that, I always think of that, you know, around the holidays, and now thinking about a waiter. So,
yeah, that's a cool story.
I so appreciate reminding me of that one.
Yeah, I guess our loved ones can be really inventive in how they get through to us.
Yeah.
We have another call. We have Jackie from Georgia. Hello, Jackie.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. We're good. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Did you have something to share, or did you have a question?
I have both. So
okay.
So I've had premonitionary dreams since I was 2 years old, and my son passed away 4 years ago, and he was very active the first year, and it took us a while to inter him. We had him cremated, but I couldn't let go of the ashes, and finally I interred him, and it was like really, really hard for me to let go. And so I talked to him and I said, "Please give me a sign." We used to walk this track a lot. And so I said, "I'm going to walk the track for 3 days. And if you just like put an A in the sky," or because his name was Alex. And anyway, so every day for 3 days, I went and nothing. And at the end of the third day, I was putting the dog in the car. It was a totally clear day, no clouds in the sky. And I thought, "I'm going to give it one last try." And I turned around and looked, and I had a great big A in the sky.
Wow.
So I have a photo of it on my desk next to me, which is really cool. But my question is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, please.
We're amazed.
Yeah, I was amazed too. We were very close. But in the last year, he has not been around, and I was just wondering if he might come through tonight and have something to share.
Well, I mean, unfortunately, none of us are, you know, have mediumistic ability. You know, we have, you know, other shows for that, but I mean, you never know if he'll, you know, if he'll come through. I mean, I think that their desire most of all is to come through directly to us, you know, find a way. Like you heard some of the stories tonight, and the people coming through and with different signs, or moving an object, or, you know, through a dream visitation. So you don't necessarily need the services of a third party, but they'll find a way, you know, and who knows.
I'm tonight, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, tonight
I thought there were mediums.
No, I mean, we have a another show called Mediums and Messages, that which is on the third Thursday. Is that the?
I think
the third Thursday of every month. So
the third Thursday.
So, and then you can call in and get messages from certified medium. So, but I hope that you get something directly before then.
You know,
hopefully you get something tonight when you go to bed.
Well, I was going to say,
me too.
If you listen back to this program, I don't know how quickly they get archived, but maybe Alex will imprint something, and if you listen back, maybe there will be a surprise.
Yeah, maybe.
That's a great thought.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. Thanks
have a great call. Night, guys.
You too.
Take care.
Jennifer wrote in, "A couple years ago, I had the most beautiful dream. My parents were standing on the corner of the deck and waving to me. This is how they always stood together as I backed out of their driveway to head back to New England. The deck was like their own, but the house was different. And below the deck were the most beautiful flowers, all kinds. They did not have abundant flowers like this at their house. There were pink flowers shaped like bells that I had never seen before. The next evening, I Googled bell-shaped pink flowers, and the results showed that they were Canterbury bells. I live on Canterbury Road. My favorite color is pink. I took that as them saying hi from beyond and showing me that they are just fine and at peace. That Mother's Day, I got a Canterbury bell tattoo in pink, of course. It helps me feel warm thoughts of my parents and peaceful, happy feelings. This is the only time over the last 8 years since they've both been gone that I had a dream with them together. Yeah, well, thanks for sharing that, Jennifer. And, you know, sometimes people get somewhat distressed that they haven't had this dream visitation. And then when they least expect it, and that could be years later, it happens, or sometimes it happens again, you know, and so forth. So I would say that you can't force it to happen, but I wouldn't be distressed if it doesn't, you know, in the timeline that you're looking for, right?
You're right about that, Bob. We can't, there's no way to make it happen. But the way her dream was so vividly described to me, that wherever her parents reside in the afterlife together, even just as beings of energy and light, that vision is, you know, you can create for your loved one to remember you by.
Yeah. Somebody just sent in an email just saying, I've received so many signs from my late husband, my mother, my father, my sister, and brother and granddaughter. It brings me such joy. I love sharing my stories and hearing others. Such an incredible healing experience for all. And, you know, that's interesting because we talk about that all the time. It's, you know, other people can find comfort in hearing your stories, you know, because.
Sharing is really a great thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's great to share.
I want to say apologize, but I have nothing to apologize for. But I'm sorry for the people, and we get this question a lot, and we get people who get signs, you know, and then all of a sudden they don't get signs, and they're concerned about that. And then there are the other people who don't get signs at all, and they're concerned about it. And they asked us, does that mean that they don't care anymore? Does that mean that they're somewhere else? And we still don't have a good answer for that. And but we keep asking anybody who might know, and we certainly will share it here when we do. But for now, it's a mystery. But I think the message I want to convey at this point is what Renee. Was it Ree, I think, earlier, who said that she asks for them, and when she gets them, she's grateful for them, she thanks them for them. And I think that's the best you can do. You put out the intention, I'd love to hear from you in some way, somehow. And then if you do, by all means, say, oh, thank you for doing that. I loved it, you know, and I'd love you to do it again anytime you'd like. So it's a process. And then the other part of that is, I know some mediums tell you to be specific, and Ree earlier was wanting to get hearts, and she was getting hearts, and we have people say, you know, pick something and get it, and they get it, and that's nice. But sometimes if you ask for a sign and it doesn't come the way you want it to, you discount it. So, you know, keep your eyes and ears open for anything that just was a little out of the ordinary. And if it in any way relates to your loved one, you can hold on to that.
You know, I was going to say the three of us here are around the same age. So let's make a pact. Whichever one of us goes next, we'll come back maybe during a radio show. One of us and whoever it may be. And let's just, you know, share that with our listeners right at that moment.
Okay, I'm in. Speaking of that, the one question that came in is, everyone I speak to, including myself, we're always looking for more signs from our loved ones. Can we ever get enough signs? But that's, it is a good question, because we talk about that, you know, it's never enough, you know, I mean,
right.
You know, and hopefully, you know, our hope is that people get to the point where they know, and it is enough, and they could live their lives with some peace. It's even with medium readings, you know, we both know people that go from medium to medium to medium. Like, if you get a really great medium reading, that's a good time maybe to stop, you know.
Yeah. Like,
why set yourself up for possible disappointment? Maybe the next medium's not going to be able to do it, you know. So, but yeah, and then here was a question, which is better for someone in grief after losing a loved one, a good therapist or a good medium?
Oh, well.
So
I don't want to disparage therapy, because a lot of people get a lot of good out of therapy. But I got to tell you, a good medium reading, the results of that are just phenomenal. And what you can get with one good session with a medium can, and you could go for years to a therapist and not get the same relief.
Yeah. And but of course, there's no reason that you can't do both, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then a lot of therapists today, and we know some of them, you know, recommend mediums to their patients, you know, as part of their treatment. You know, it's always difficult when we talk about this, because, I mean, there are people that have, you know, clinical depression and so forth, and they need professional help. But as Tom was saying, you know, they sometimes therapists treat people, you know, with medication that don't really need it, and whereas a medium might be able to give an evidential reading that really flips the person's perspective totally, and means a lot. So it's not, therapy is not for everybody, and some people have tremendous results by it, but I don't see anything wrong with people, you know, doing both depending on, you know, how they feel.
I think a good therapist is an excellent idea. How would we feel if that therapist poo-pooed the mediumship and indicated that was going to lead to more problems? I don't think I'd want to stay with a therapist like that. I'd like a therapist who's open.
Well, that I agree. I mean, that's a good point, because as we know, there probably the majority of therapists are not open to this. You know, they want to treat you about coping mechanisms, and they try to teach you to get on with your life and disassociate from your loved one and, you know, move on. Whereas some other forward-thinking therapists talk about continuing bonds, right, to maintaining a relationship with the loved one. So where we have a problem is, you know, the therapist, as you alluded to, that totally dismiss the feelings. And if I was going to a therapist, and and I believed in life after death, and my therapist was indifferent or showed no inclination to go in that direction, I wouldn't be that comfortable. Whereas if I went to a grief professional that knew about this, maybe even had a personal loss of their own, I would feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
Right.
Someone you could talk to openly, you know, not feel like you had to hold back this special information that makes you feel so good.
Yeah. I recall going to a grief counselor. It was a nurse practitioner, you know, who was I forget the term, but she, you know, it was therapy, and I didn't particularly get a lot out of it, but it was around the same time that we were starting the foundation, and I was already getting interested in all this stuff. And she, as it turned out, was very interested in this stuff. And we used to spend our whole sessions with her asking me questions about mediums and, you know, and everything else. And like, one day I was saying, well, wait a second. Like, I'm paying her for
that. What did you charge her? Whatever, you
know. It's not like I was working out her stuff, you know. That didn't last very long.
That made me think of, it's a little bit off topic of therapists, but I'm pretty sure it's written in her first book when Laura Lynn Jackson, one of our certified mediums, shared that she was working as an English teacher and was trying to keep her mediumship under wraps. And when the staff and the principal found out and she was called into the office, and she thought, oh boy,
I have a job.
And what did the principal say? Can you tell me, is my mother here?
I know. Well, you know, I probably told you this story and you forgot, but it relates to this therapist that I was going to. So I was scheduled for a session with her, and apparently there was a miscommunication, and I was there for our appointment at 9 o'clock, and she had it in her book at 10 o'clock. So when I got there, the door was locked and there was nobody there. So I wanted to let her know that I was there. So I had a copy I published Bailey, my daughter's writings. So I had it in the car. So I got one of the books and I put it under the door. And that night, the phone rang and I answered the phone and it was the therapist, and she sounded, I mean, I don't know whether she was upset or excited, or there was something going on that she didn't want to discuss. You know, she apologized for the mix up and she said, I had to come in at 9 o'clock the next morning to have a regular session. And when I got there, she told me that when she arrived at her office and she saw the book, she realized what must have happened. So she had that time blocked out. So she sat down in a chair in her office and she started reading, you know, Bailey's stories. And she came to the part, there was one story that Bailey wrote where in it she said that her dad was her hero, you know. And as soon as she read that part, the therapist tells me that her office phone rang. So she picked up the phone and she said hello, and she just heard giggling, you know, which to her sounded like, you know, a young girl. And she kept saying hello, and then the giggling went on for like 30 seconds, and then it stopped, you know, and it disappeared. So she thought that was, you know, nuts. So she hung up the phone, and then 30 seconds later, the lights in her office went out. You know, she was in this big office building. So, you know, she opened the door and looked around. Nobody else in the building had any electrical problems. And she was in that office for years and never, you know, had an issue. So those two things combined, especially because she knew some of the stuff that I was talking about, really had a crazy impact on her. You know, I mean, she really, you know, it was therapy for her, you know. Plus it opened up her mind to all this stuff. And there is, when we talk about this so often, you know, some people are fearful of such things, you know. Yeah. Fortunately, she wasn't, but it could have just as easily, you know, scared her, right? Because the stuff that you can't perceive with your physical senses. But I thought that was an interesting story for me too, because the timing of it, you know, read that chapter, then the phone happens to ring and it's a young girl and it's giggling and then the lights go out, you know, even me, who didn't necessarily believe in all this stuff then, you know, those are the kind of things that you step back and say, okay, you know, could be, right?
Oh, I don't recall you telling us that, Bob, but it sounds so true to Bailey's whole disposition and personality.
Yeah. Well, especially because one of the stories, the poems, was The Wonder Awaits, you know, how she's going to come back and tell us what it's like, right?
Yeah.
So that fits. Yeah,
that's amazing.
That's
so we got some other questions here. If we have visitation dreams of our loved ones here, do they also have dreams about us? I never thought about it that way.
I don't even know if they sleep.
Right. I don't think they sleep. But that's a good point. Forgetting about everything else, there's no need to sleep. So right. You're having a dream.
I guess the quick answer to that is, sure, if they're visiting you in a dream, you're visiting them in your dream. You know, it's a two-way street there. So you're both getting the visitation. And then the other answer is, well, they don't need to dream or whatever to see you because they're around you. That's another thing. The terminology when you say, well, they're up there or they're on the other side or anything, there really isn't an up there or another side. You're all here in this realm, but just at a different vibration. And when you think about it, well, how come we can't see them if they're here? Well, can you see a radio wave? You can't see radio waves, but you know they're there because you can turn on the radio and the waves are bringing you music. But you can't see those waves. Well, that's the same thing with spirit. They're at a much, much higher frequency than we can perceive with our senses, but they're around us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And back to the dreaming part, I recall in that book we talk about so often, Testimony of Light. And if we think about it logically, when we're born into this lifetime as babies, we sleep a lot. And in Testimony of Light, Francis mentions transitioning to the other side, and she's in these periods of sleep and then wakefulness and takes in what's around her and goes back to sleep. And it, you know, we don't know, but it kind of makes sense that when you're transitioning into a new life, that it would be that transition period of slowly adjusting. Not like dreams would be involved, but who knows if newborn babies, they're probably dreaming about the womb or what, you know, whatever just happened before being born here.
Yeah, I wonder if there's any need for meditation when you're in the spirit realm. I mean, you still have a mind and a consciousness, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's a way of focusing or getting things done, right?
I would think so, because
it might be everything.
When you meditate in this realm, it's to help you raise your vibration and get in touch with the flow of the universe. So when you cross over, you still want to be in touch with the flow of the universe. You still want to be taken to a positive place. So some form of meditation in that realm seems logical.
Yeah.
Other questions. Some people have end-of-life visions where they see deceased relatives, but others do not. So why do you, and the question is, why do you think that is?
Do we know they do not? How do we know?
That's what I was going to say. I mean, we don't know. Because obviously, a lot of people, when they're near the end of their life, you know, they are not only have physical ailments, but their cognitive abilities are impaired too. So they may not, you know, what some people were able, we know they're having a vision because they're reaching out their hands and they're talking to their loved ones, and they'll say mom and so forth, and we can listen to the conversations that they're having. But I know we've talked about this before, but I think that everybody has a deathbed vision. It's just that they're not able to tell us, you know, because the brain apparatus is impaired, but their mind is still, you know, going, and they're able to make that connection. So I think it's a mistake to assume that some don't. You know, I think that we all do, but we don't really know.
Yeah, and in this whole process that we're going through of discovery and exploration and looking for these answers, definitive answers, a lot of what we draw from is experiences that match other experiences completely separate from one another. And when you see enough of these, you start to develop what is kind of a universal truth. And more than anything else, in the 20 years that we've been doing this, I have heard several times, so much so that I accept it as a truth, is that everybody who passes to the who dies will have someone there to greet them. So, and it's usually a loved one. But even if it's not, there will be a spirit there to greet you. I would say everybody has the death vision. But as we have talked, a lot of people can't verbalize it to us.
Right. I read earlier that somebody wrote in that, you know, she gets signs from everybody, she had a list of all the relatives, and she just sent us an email. While listening to your radio show tonight, I received this heart, and it's a picture of a big heart in the sky out her window.
I'll take that.
That seems to be the theme here this evening. I like it.
Do all religions believe in life after death? I'm no expert in religion, but all the religions that I know of have varying degrees of belief and different perspective on it. But the common thing is that they all believe in life after death. I mean, unless you want to consider, atheism a religion, but other than that, I mean, and some of the Eastern religions differ from some of the Western religions about merging into the greater consciousness as opposed to retaining our individuality, like a lot of certainly we believe. So, yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, I don't know if you know more about religion than me, but.
I was raised on the Bible, but I was curious, so I bought especially after 9/11, I bought a copy of the Quran and read that to try to see, well, where is it in their religion that endorses what happened on 9/11? And I was really amazed with how similar the Quran is to the Bible.
Right.
It's very similar, and the teachings are the same as far as afterlife. I mean, the whole thing about your promised virgins or something.
Yeah. When you go
on the other side. I mean, it's, that part is different, but it's based on the premise that there is an afterlife.
Yeah.
I wasn't raised with any set religion, and I did not ever get it. It was never suggested to me to read the Bible, so I've learned a lot from you, Tom, but it seems as though the Buddhist philosophy is something I would align with most, just in hearing their beliefs and points of view, if I had to choose a religion.
Well, you can.
That's right.
You don't have to.
Let's see. Is the spiritual world a real world? And by that, I think they're referring to real, like, are there cities and oceans and landscapes and so forth. Obviously, we can't know, but we've read a lot of channel reports that say that there are.
Isn't it what you envision it? Isn't it more like your world?
You manifest it.
Right.
And that's a good question. That's a good answer, that you have the ability to manifest what you want your world to look like when you're on the other side. But one step further, there are people who say, well, you can manifest here. You don't have to wait till you're on the other side. You can manifest, you create your own reality in this world. You know, I'm still working on that one, but
yeah.
Supposedly you can.
Yeah. I think the biggest difference between the two worlds is that in the next world, you can't hide your true thoughts and feelings.
That's, yes. That's a biggie.
That, yeah. The facade, if you're putting on some sort of facade in this world, get ready, because on the other side, all is dropped away.
An open book.
And you're going to be also, according to some sources, grouped with those people, those same people who are faking it right now. You're going to find yourself within that, like that will be your soul group.
Yeah. Some people think that, you know, they're disturbed by that, you know, that, you know, that everybody knows what they're thinking and, you know, and they can't hide anything, but they're thinking from this ego mind, you know, which you don't have there. There's no need to hide anything there. You know, you're not going to gain anything on anybody by, you know, there's no money, you know, no material, you know. So if love and compassion are your currency, what need do you have to have more than somebody else? So it's hard for us to know until we're there. But like you said, Melissa, well, one of us will let the other one know soon enough. You know, we're getting up there in age.
Yeah,
I have. I have a friend who does not believe in life after death, and she gets upset with me when I talk about my signs of communications. How do you suggest I handle this?
I think we know there are other friends that you could have.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's wrong to like get into a debate, you know. I mean, don't try to convince anybody. I mean, you remain open to her explanations and listen to her, and if she's open-minded, she'll listen to you. But I think it wouldn't hurt to share some of your signs and communications, and you don't really care what she thinks, but maybe some of it'll sink in and open up her mind to the possibilities, right?
Go ahead.
It reminds me of a friend of ours who whose wife passed away, and we were,
spending
time with him, and we, of course, being in this mindset, saying, well, you know, have you seen any signs? And he was immediately, I don't believe in any of that. Don't even talk to me about that. And so we didn't talk. In our, you know, in response to that email, we let it drop. And then we still hung out with him and we're trying to comfort him. And as we talked, you know, after some time, he would talk about things that he observed and that sort of thing. And Melissa and I looked at each other and goes, it was a sign. So he doesn't believe in it, but he's getting them. And he knows that they're signs from her. It's just that he's so set in his ways that he does not want to even consider what we're talking about as a possibility, even though that's how he saw it. He saw it as a sign. But
wouldn't use that word.
But don't use the word sign. It would be like, oh, no, you can't be using that. So it's an interesting, it's what we're dealing with here. Society has so ingrained in people that you don't talk about this stuff that, not only some people say, well, don't talk about it. You'll stir up evil if you talk about it, you know, that kind of thing. So that's a big hill to overcome, what we're trying to get people to be aware of.
But if we back it up to what we were just talking about, was the question, does every religion believe in an afterlife? Because our friend was quite religious.
Well, yeah, he's a Christian, and I've often quoted, you know, Jesus said, he's whoever follows or believes in me shall not perish, but have everlasting life. There's your religion right there. If you don't take it from the source and say, yeah, this religion believes in that, but they're Christians and they're saying, oh, no, don't talk to me about an afterlife. I said, well, you know, if somebody brings up Jesus, do you say, oh, no, he talks about the afterlife? It doesn't make sense.
Well, back to this person whose friend, you know, I'd say share, just find the right people to share your stories with. And, of course, I wasn't being serious about finding a new friend. I'm sure every friend serves a purpose in your life of some sort. But there are special friends, like we used to have our afterlife discussion groups, where you knew you could share all your stories in a welcoming setting. And people all seem to benefit from hearing each other's stories. Like we said before with the signs, you know, you may not have your own story to share, but hearing others gives you hope.
Right. And don't be afraid to share it. I mean, okay, you know, this friend is going to put a wall in front of you, so you don't share with that friend.
Right.
My mom had an experience after my dad passed where he actually appeared, you know, as an apparition in front of her, and she was so excited by it. And she went to, she was a very avid churchgoer, and she was in a group of friends at a Bible study group, and she was sitting in the group of women, she was just contained. They couldn't contain her excitement. So she said, well, you know, I probably shouldn't be talking about this here, but I just wanted to just bring it up. And she shared her experience. And to her surprise, there was a lady over there who goes, oh, yes. And I did it. And another one, oh, yeah, me too. You'd be surprised how many me toos you get when you bring up something like that.
And you know what? I heard that exact story from her own lips. I came across it on a YouTube video when she was interviewed for Forever Family Foundation. And those videos are still out there. So if people want to hear Madge Gould share her experience, I wasn't sure. I don't know what I was, what title I was searching under, but it's available on YouTube. And you as well, Bob, with a shade darker hair.
Well, actually, when I read that question about having a friend that didn't believe in the afterlife, I was thinking of Madge because that's, you know, she's in this group and, you know, a lot of people are told that, you know, we don't talk about those things, you know. No. Yes, there's an afterlife, but we're not allowed to talk about that, you know. So, and she opened some minds on her own, you know, a lot of minds, you know, so she did a great thing in that respect. Some people that have near-death experiences talk about how they were told that they must return to the physical world. What happens if one doesn't listen and tries to stay? So in other words, you're told it's not, you know, not your time. You have to go back, and you say, no, I'm staying. You know, so I think from everything that I've read is that there's always a choice. You know, you may be told by your guides that there's more work that you have to do, but I think that ultimately the choice is yours, you know, whether you want to come back or not.
I'm not so sure about that one.
Yeah, I'm puzzled by that too.
Because I get the, in fact, one that was at a Forever Family Foundation event that was being held in a college, and one of the custodians saw me sitting at the table and came over to me, and he told me about his near-death experience, where he was on a porch with his father, and he collapsed. And the first thing, all of a sudden, he said, "Whoa!" First thing I realized, it was just a beautiful, beautiful vision out there, and here was my dog from my childhood comes running up to me, and then the next thing I know, my father is shaking me and waking me up, and I was really pissed because I didn't want to come back. I wanted to be over there. And I get that a lot. A lot of people don't want to go back. Once they see how beautiful it is, it's like, why would I want to go back to that?
Right. Well, see, I know, and I agree with you. So I keep thinking of that. So I'm in this, let's say I'm hurting physically, you know, I'm in pain. I go there, this beautiful thing. My loved ones are there, you know, and I'm told I have to go back. You know, that may be problematic for, you know, for a lot of people, you know, even though you're told that this, so I don't know how it works, you know, but it's true, Tom, that most people, when told that they are needed back here for more time, they reluctantly agree. But some people from reading near NDE accounts, they're upset when they get back, and it's really hard to make that adjustment. You've seen the next world, you know, and now you're back in the confines of the physical world. So that's a big adjustment. But on the other hand, now you could live your life differently because you know what awaits you. You know, you're not afraid of that. Yeah.
Hey, I'm reminded of one of our volunteers who had a near-death experience, and the love and joy that she felt when she was in the NDE, when she came back to the earth and was here, she was not satisfied because she kept looking for that love again that only exists on the other side, and she never found it here, and she's now on the other side, hopefully enjoying it to the fullest. But the rest of her life was kind of tainted by, I'm not going to find here what it is that I'm really looking for, kind of thing.
Haven't you also heard the stories I have where people have had the NDEs, and I can't say that they were saying, as they recalled it, wanting to stay on the other side, but because they were brought back here, it wasn't their time, that there was just something here they were meant to accomplish. And it didn't have to be something grand, like a life-saving, medicine or something, but just simply maybe touching one person's life, you know, and in the smallest way, makes it all worthwhile. So I don't think we'll ever really know how that all works till we get over there and say, okay, you know, explain this to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, both worlds are connected, like we say. I mean, the plan is really hard to recognize while we're here, but we'll see the plan once we have that broader perspective from being an interdimensional person, right?
Yes.
I know we don't have a lot of time, but let's see. Do we meet those again? Do we meet again those whom we had known and loved, our married partners, our children, our parents, our friends? You know, do we meet them on the other side? We believe so. I think that if we had a bond with them or a love bond, that we'll see them. I mean, if we didn't have a strong connection with them, we're in the physical, we may not, right? I mean,
yeah.
That's the way I look at it. So what happens? I mean, let's say you have a sibling, or you had many siblings, and there was one sibling that, for whatever reason in the physical, you did not get along with. You know, you didn't feel love for that sibling. So are you going to be connected? Perhaps, you know, perhaps not, because there's not that love bond there. But then we're thinking about love from our perspective and ego here, which disappears when we're over there. So just because we didn't like them here doesn't mean we're not going to love them when we get over there. It's complicated.
I think, yeah, thinking about that, because I can relate to a situation like that, and as can Tom. And, you know, we were born into the family. I feel we were born into the families that we were born into, and put in families with certain people of all different personalities and dispositions. For some sort of reason, something we're supposed to learn from.
And I think that if you analyze it, the reason that you did not get along with whatever, you know, family member or whatever, is pretty much ego driven.
Right.
So, right. And ego is not a factor once you're in spirit.
Yeah, ego disappears, and all those reasons that we had no longer exist. They're petty and they're meaningless and so forth. All right, we'll reach the end of our time. I'll just read Claude's prayer. Let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thoughts by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.